From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. He says he didn't think they would shoot him down, a 61-year-old mailman on what he calls his flying bicycle. It's a bare-bones helicopter, a gyrocopter. Doug Hughes landed it on the Capitol lawn last week to raise alarm over big money in American politics. Okay, he's got our attention, and not just us. This hour on Point, as we head into the 2016 presidential campaign, how American politics has become a billionaire's ball. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Are you glad the flying mailman has raised the issue again? What do we do about it? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We heard about Hughes, last Wednesday he was landed that gyrocopter. Before his flight, he laid out his plans in a video here from the Tampa Bay Times.
I'm going to violate the no-fly zone nonviolently. I intend for nobody to get hurt. And I'm going to land on the Capitol Mall in front of the Capitol building. I'm going to have 535 letters strapped to the landing gear in boxes. And those letters are going to be addressed to every member of Congress.
Land he did. Shocked the whole country. Now he's got an ankle bracelet and a lot of attention focused on his cause. He's headed off for a court hearing soon. Could face time in jail. Here he is this morning. Again, Doug Hughes. This was talking with Good Morning America from his home in Florida before the ankle bracelet.
I think almost everybody feels that there's corruption in Congress. I think people have a gut feeling that Congress isn't working for them. I think that goes across party lines completely. It's necessary to bring national attention to the problem of corruption in Congress as the first step of solving it.
He's not the only one who's worried about this, and right now it goes across party lines. We'll hear from Lindsey Graham, Chris Christie, but first from Tampa, Florida, Ben Montgomery joins us, reporter for the Tampa Bay Times. Doug Hughes, the man who flew the gyrocopter, contacted Ben earlier this year about his plans, and Ben was on the Washington Mall last week, waiting, watching as the mailman flew in. Ben Montgomery, welcome to On Point.
Thank you, sir. How are you?
I'm all right. You were standing by the Washington Monument, and where were you looking, and what did you see?
I was looking northwest. We had lost, Doug had a live stream video being broadcast from his gyrocopter, but it kept cutting in and out. And so we had lost contact, or at least a sense of where he was. And so we walked out to the mall to try to get a better view. And I looked over my shoulder to the northwest, and I saw a tiny black dot on the distance. And I told my colleague, there he is. That's him. I can't believe it.
He came in all the way from Gettysburg. What did you do when you saw him coming? Where did you head?
I turned and started running up the mall. I was most interested in seeing him touch down at the Capitol lawn and what that scene might have been like. And I realized I was out of position, and so I had to hustle. I had to hustle.
That's a pretty good hike. That's a pretty good dash all the way up the mall.
It sure it is. I haven't run like that since high school.
What did you find when you got to the Capitol lawn?
I found a lot of people who were super curious. There was, some folks have tried to suggest that he sowed terror. That wasn't the case at all from my perspective. Tourists were taking pictures of his gyrocopter. The police had just hauled him away. I actually caught a social studies teacher telling a class of about 30 junior high kids about civil disobedience and protest, and he was giving them a lesson based on Doug's landing of his copter.
I'm reading here from different listeners writing into us right now. One says here, Honest says, he's a wacko liberal who violated the airspace of the Capitol. He could well have been shot down. Don't make him a hero. What do you say to that?
People are going to perceive Doug how they want to perceive Doug. In my experience, he's a sane person who might happen to just be insane enough to pull off a stunt like this. But he had planned this to a T. He bought the gyrocopter. He learned how to fly it. He wrote and addressed 535 letters, one to each member of Congress. And he did this to arrest the news cycle, to get people to focus their attention, the media especially, to focus their attention on what he perceives to be an issue that's causing the democracy to crumble, campaign finance reform. And he's done that. He pulled it off. We're still talking about him, and it's Monday. This is, 5 days later.
And is that his fear? Is that what he said to you, that he was afraid that big money would bring democracy down?
Oh, very much, yes, sir. He's been thinking about this for a long while. He's written a lot about it, but he couldn't get anybody's attention, and he felt like like this topic, among others, deserves our focus. We need to pay attention to this.
Here he is again, the flying mailman from a little of that Tampa Bay Times video.
I'd rather die in the flight than live to be 80 years old and see this country fall.
Did they think he would be shot down? Well, no.
I don't believe that the authorities are going to shoot down a 60-year-old mailman in a flying bicycle. I'm going to give them plenty of warning, well over an hour in advance of me getting to the no-fly zone, so that they know who I am and what I'm doing and that it's intended to be nonviolent.
Ben, what did he ask for in the letter? What would he like to see done?
Well, he lays out an ultimatum. You either participate in reform or you will be taken to account. And his idea is local newspapers will hold their politicians accountable when it comes to campaign finance reform. He wants a constitutional amendment that puts caps on big spending in elections, and among other things. But he thinks that this is the key ingredient to reforming the cycle, to getting big money out of politics and return the power ultimately to the people.
What's he facing right now in terms of legal repercussions?
He's looking at 4 years. He faces two crimes, one flying into restricted airspace and the other operating an aircraft without the proper registration. So that could bring him 4 years in prison as a max. As you know, he's under house arrest now. He can't leave home unless he has a medical issue. He's probably going to lose his job. He's been put on administrative leave at the moment, but he's going to face some repercussions. We'll see how aggressively the prosecution, the state, goes after him.
Did you think you would make it to the Capitol lawn, Ben?
No, sir. Honestly, I didn't. I thought enough people knew in advance what he was going to do, that he'd be brought down maybe over a field in rural Pennsylvania, somewhere outside of D.C. I was completely surprised when I saw him coming in. And he was, too. He expected if he did make it that far, he expected the mall to be ringed by police cars with their lights flashing. And he pictured a Black Hawk helicopter hovering over the Capitol lawn to intercept him. None of those things happened. He was super surprised that there was really no resistance, and he was able to do exactly what he planned.
Ben Montgomery in Tampa. Hang on for a couple of our listeners here. Wapaka, Wisconsin. Madeline, you're on with Tampa Bay, Florida. Thanks for calling, Madeline.
Hello. Yes, I think he should be hailed as a national hero for two reasons, and for him pointing out the importance of our election process and our government, and also he exposed the danger to the Capitol that no one knew, and yeah. He should be a hero.
Madeline, we've got a danger that somebody could just fly right up there, maybe with more than letters to congressmen under their wing. Linda in Columbus, Georgia. Linda, thank you for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Yes, I wanted to say that I believe that the mailman did the right thing. I hope that he gets only probation and no fines and no jail time. I believe he called attention to what most Americans are feeling, that we are being held hostage by our Congress, who have no concern for the American public at all. I also believe that he did a good thing in showing how easy it was for the security of the Capitol,
to be breached right there.
To be insecure, and that maybe they need to work on that as well. So I think overall he did a very good thing.
Linda, I appreciate your call as well. Ben Montgomery, what about you? There's been criticism that you and the paper should have come forward more loudly and said, hey, there's going to be this assault on secure airspace.
And ultimately, we were comfortable with the fact that Secret Service had interviewed him twice, about a year and change before he took the flight, and talked to a colleague of his who was aware of the flights. He was on their radar. And then beyond that, everything that Doug has done that I'm aware of in terms of his plan has been transparent and open and honest, and he had no ill intentions. We were all comfortable with that. He wanted to do an act of civil disobedience, and that's what he did. So we're comfortable with our reporting of this.
Ben Montgomery, reporter with the Tampa Bay Times, who spent a fair amount of time talking with Doug Hughes, the mailman, before he took his gyrocopter to the Capitol lawn. Ben, thanks for joining us from Tampa today.
Thank you, Tom. Take care.
A lot of people talking about this. Here in Barrington, New Hampshire, earlier this month, Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina talked about the Citizens United ruling that opened the floodgates.
Citizens United basically struck down parts of McCain Pine Gold.
Right.
And now it's the Wild Wild West.
And now it's the Wild Wild West, says Republican Lindsey Graham. He goes on.
What I worry about is that we're turning campaigns over to about 100 people in this country.
That's right. That's right.
And they're going to be to advocate their cause at the expense of your cause.
The sound a little rough there, but he says he's worried we're turning campaigns over to about 100 people in this country. Talking sort of about billionaires there. Gene Cummings joins us right now, Deputy Managing Editor for Enterprise and Politics at Bloomberg News. Gene, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
How is this 2016 campaign shaping up in terms of volume of money and transparency about who's contributing?
It's Lindsey's right. It is a bit of a Wild Wild West out there. There is money that's already being collected. The Bush campaign, for instance, has estimated that they'd like to have $100 million by the time they open their books this summer. So that alone is setting a pace that we have not seen before. The focus this cycle is very much on landing the big donors first and courting them. Last cycle and the cycle before, President Obama put a premium on small donors. We don't see much of that this time. So, you know, we have billionaires being courted. We have secret money accounts being set up. Four Republicans have already got them set up. So we're in for a new ride this time.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the gyrocopter pilot's complaint. Big money politics in America, bigger than ever. And we're looking at how that is setting up the 2016 campaign. You know, Florida mailman Doug Hughes, he's under house arrest for landing on the Capitol lawn to raise the issue. And here we are. It's raised. I mean, the money itself, it raises itself. Here was Doug Hughes one more time before he made that flight from Gettysburg to the Capitol lawn, kind of astonishing, and what he calls his flying bicycle, saying it's time to build a wall here.
Change the government to build a wall of separation between the government and big money so that government will represent the people.
Politicians are picking it up. We heard Lindsey Graham there calling it the Wild Wild West, warning that 100 Americans could guide the ship of state. Hillary Clinton's been talking about it. She was in Iowa last week at a roundtable there at Kirkwood Community College saying about that we've got a problem here.
We need to fix our dysfunctional political system and get unaccountable money out of it once and for all, even if that takes a constitutional amendment.
Of course, the Republicans had some fun with that. Here was Republican New Jersey Governor Chris Christie taking a jab at Hillary Clinton about campaign finance reform talk.
She intends to raise $2.5 billion for her campaign, but she wants to then get the corrupting money out of politics. You know, it's classic, right? It's classic politician speak.
Yeah, well, there's all kinds. Christie himself saying, quoting him, quoted in the Washington Post today, I think what is corrupting in this potentially is we don't know where the money is coming from. Gene Cummings is with us from Bloomberg News. Gene, describe these new dynamics of what's going on with the so-called nonprofits and the dark money and how 2016 is shaping up.
Yeah, so, well, the new wrinkle this year is the nonprofits. There was some experimentation with it in the midterms. But now we're seeing it really flower.
What are they? What is that about?
These are organizations that are under a section of the tax code that typically is reserved for charities or groups that are there for the social good. And so, you know, this might be a voter registration group.
Okay.
So it's not like they never played in politics, but they would play mostly in either a bipartisan or nonpartisan manner and in a way that helped the community as a large. You know, getting people to vote is a good thing for our democracy.
Mm-hmm.
So what we've found is all of a sudden people have been using that section, which is 501c4, to create these new groups that are dedicated to one candidate. And they are not required to disclose their donors. They can engage in politics at a certain level. It's unclear at what level. The IRS has spent years trying to figure out what exactly should it be, 50% of their activity or 45%, you know, trying to set some kind of standard. Well, while the IRS dithers, the lawyers who create these things have decided for themselves what it's going to be, and we'll see if the IRS differs with them. So they're not waiting for the IRS.
And what kind of numbers are we seeing coming in? Do we know?
No, we don't know. It's very difficult to find out. What we can find out is when they do go out and spend in certain ways, we can track their spending. And so when they go out and they advertise on television, we can track the ads. And so we know hundreds of millions were spent in the midterm by outside groups on usually attack ads. That much we can know. But then you take an organization, for example, I'm sure all of your listeners mm-hmm. have heard of the Koch brothers, mm-hmm. Charles and David Koch, who are very politically active billionaires.
Big industrialists.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And they have been reportedly said that they were going to spend up to $900 million, almost $1 billion all by themselves.
On the 2016 campaign.
With their supporters on the 2016 campaign. And the vast majority of that, we will never know where it is because it's not going to go into TV. They also are doing voter registration. They also are doing voter turnout. They've got many different organizations under one big umbrella. And the bulk of what they do is not TV. So they may spend that much. They may not. We won't know.
And then there's this issue of candidates who are not formally declared candidates and the greater latitude for bringing in big money that extends to them. How's that work, Jean?
That is absolutely a great point to make, Tom, because the field is so uneven right now among the candidates.
Why?
Because different rules apply. If you are a federal office holder, Lindsey Graham, Rand Paul, mm-hmm. Marco Rubio, mm-hmm. then some of the campaign donation restrictions do apply to you. And you are prohibited from raising money for a super PAC. If, however, you are not a federal office holder, you are former governor of Florida, Jeb Bush, or Governor Walker in Wisconsin, then you can raise money for a super PAC as long as you are not an announced candidate. So what that's done is pushed the calendar back. They're out there doing everything a candidate does, but they haven't announced. So the federal rules don't apply to them yet. And so they can go out and raise millions of dollars, sometimes in a single check, without violating any of the rules.
So that might be a reason for people to put off their formal announcement. That's really interesting. This was Jeb Bush in 2012 talking about law and campaign finance.
I would love the idea of having campaigns be funded directly rather than indirectly and have no limits and total transparency. So if people were offended by a large donor, that the candidate, he or she would have to accept responsibility for the message and for the amount of money and for who gave it.
What do we know about the Jeb Bush campaign now and their fundraising, and for that matter, Hillary Clinton's fundraising before her formal announcement, Jean?
In both cases, well, in Hillary Clinton's case, she had a super PAC ready for Hillary that was aligned with her campaign, operating independent of it. Well, she doesn't have a campaign. Well, she's just putting it together. But Ready for Hillary was independent. They did disclose their donors voluntarily. Mm-hmm. They also put a cap on how much they would take, up to $25,000, because they were really about building a grassroots army for her to have when she got in the race. Now there is another super PAC, Priorities USA Action, that is also going to support her candidacy. They are taking larger checks, but they have said they will disclose. In Jeb Bush's case, he has, over the past, and I think we'll see it in this cycle, embraced the idea of disclosure. And we expect in July, when the first filing deadline arrives, that the super PAC that is going to support him will indeed disclose its donors.
Gene Cummings with Bloomberg, please stand by. It's great to have you there in Washington. Also from Washington, Fred Wertheimer joins us, founder, president of Democracy 21, advocate for transparency in government and campaign finance reform. They're one of two watchdog groups that has actually filed a complaint with the Federal Election Commission. They say that a number of candidates are skirting federal regulations on campaign finance. Fred Wertheimer, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Tom.
Who's doing what? What's the problem?
Well, we, along with the Campaign Legal Center, filed complaints against Jeb Bush, Governor Walker, former Governor O'Malley, and former Senator Santorum. And we said that they were testing the waters for a candidacy. And there are testing the water rules that require them to use contributions that are limited under federal law. And our complaint said that they were not doing this and that therefore the FEC should investigate their activities and take appropriate action. Part of the problem here, however, is that the FEC is a very, very weak, ineffective, almost useless agency when it comes to enforcement. So we also wrote to the Justice Department. We plan to be monitoring very carefully, along with the Campaign Legal Center, all of these so-called individual candidate super PACs that support only one presidential candidate. We believe we are going to find numerous violations over the course of the next year, and we're going to go to the FEC, but more importantly, we're going to go to the Justice Department and ask for criminal investigations.
What's the dynamic? When you look in here, do we have more single billionaire-supported groups now than we did in the past?
Well, in 2016, every serious presidential candidate will have one of these so-called individual candidate super PACs. They were unleashed by the Citizens United decision. They're a disaster for the American people. They're a farce because under Citizens United, they're required to be independent from the campaigns. And each of them are very, very closely tied to the presidential campaigns. They are simply vehicles for channeling unlimited contributions to directly support presidential candidates. But I'd like to make one other point here.
Mm-hmm.
Gene mentioned the Koch brothers and their efforts in 2016. This is unheard of in the history of our country.
You mean the volume, nearly $1 billion.
You have two individuals, each of whom is worth more than $40 billion, and they have decided to put almost $900 million into the election through their networks that they control. Now, no one has even imagined this in the past. And when you think about it, these two individuals basically want to control the election. And thereby, if their candidates win, they want to control the results that occur. Now, everyone looks at the Koch brothers and says, well, they have ideological views that they're advancing. But they have enormous economic interests. They have oil and natural gas and coal interests in Koch Industries and environmental rules and regulations, climate control rules and regulations, air pollution rules. All of these rules directly affect their economic interests.
But can they really buy all that, Fred, like ordering off a menu at a restaurant, really, even with $1 billion?
Well, what do you think? What does $1 billion do from two individuals in a campaign that's probably going to cost an overall total of $7 billion? I'm not saying that they can guarantee that they get everything they want, but money buys influence. And they are looking for influence over public policy with $890 million. Now, how does that compare to the influence that the ordinary American is going to have in this election? It just overwhelms it. And they're not the only billionaires. Look, these super PACs are simply vehicles for multimillionaires and billionaires to treat the American political system like a sandbox. They put their money in. They are looking for greater influence over the elections, greater influence over government decisions. They also have huge economic stakes. This system is a corrupt system. It's terrible for the American people. Fortunately, there is a growing national movement. I don't condone what the mailman did, but his courageous civil disobedience demonstrates the anger and frustration that is fueling a rapidly growing national movement that is going to challenge the corrupt campaign finance system in Washington.
Let's take a call from Oklahoma City. Eric, thank you for calling. You're on the air, Eric.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
One thing, it hasn't been brought up by your guests, but I was curious to hear their opinions. about when we talk about the sort of decay of pluralism with the opening of the floodgates of Citizens United, and that we have more of a political marketplace than a system increasingly. When we talk about a 10 or 100 billionaires influencing our political processes, is anyone even thinking about, with the ability for subterfuge and not knowing where money's coming from, how this is actually affecting our sovereignty? The example I give is the Democrats that have lined up against their own president's Iran deal, and the fact that so many of them take political contributions from pro-Israel groups and groups outside of this country, or that represent interests from outside of this country, in trying to influence our foreign policy, and indeed a decision that may change, could change the dynamic of probably one of the most chaotic parts of the world.
But, you know, the argument, and we'll hear it in this hour, Eric, is that this is free speech. If Americans feel that they that's the interest that they want pursued, and they take money to get that word out or support politicians for office, that's free speech, Eric.
Well, my question, that's my point, I guess, to put to your people. I'm not necessarily, these may be Americans, but is it their right of free speech to represent the interests that are exterior to the United States?
Well, but Tom, people have all kinds of interests. Eric, thanks. Fred.
Tom, even this Supreme Court has upheld candidate contribution limits because they can buy corrupting influence over government officials. Money is not free speech when you're talking about its ability to corrupt office holders. It's simply not, and no Supreme Court has held that. This Supreme Court has held these outside super PACs are okay because they're, quote, independent from the candidates. But they're simply not. The reality is the Supreme Court got it dead wrong. So you have these huge unlimited contributions coming in to influence candidates and influence what they do. We object to them no matter who they're coming from. We certainly object to dark money. Even the Supreme Court and Citizens United, by an 8-1 vote, said that campaign finance disclosure requirements for outside spending groups is constitutional. We've been fighting along with others for the last 5 years to get the Congress to fix the gaping loopholes, and Senator McConnell, the majority leader now, has led the effort to block any new laws to close the loopholes.
And one thing to point out,
yes,
Tom, when, as Fred mentioned, that they're supposed to operate independently, but they don't. Well, let's
these super PACs.
Let's give your listeners some insight into how they don't. You have a super PAC; it gets set up by the former campaign top advisor to candidate X. So this advisor knows exactly how candidate X thinks and wants to run his campaign. You also then oftentimes will find the same lawyer is working for the super PAC and is working for the candidate. And they can watch the TV ads through public documents and know where to fill in the gaps. So there are ways around it.
Hi, everybody. Tom here. I'm glad you're joining us for this On Point podcast. Before we get back to the show, I'd like to tell you about another podcast you might enjoy, too, Dear Sugar Radio. Join hosts Cheryl Strayed and Steve Almond as they field questions about love, sex, work, guilt, money, you name it. That's Dear Sugar Radio. You can find it at wbur.org/Dear Sugar or subscribe on iTunes. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about the gyrocopter pilot's complaint. Big money politics in America, bigger than ever. And we're looking at how that is setting up the 2016 campaign. We all saw the Florida mailman, Doug Hughes. He's under house arrest now. He landed on that Capitol lawn to raise the issue. Here it is, in front of us. Fred Wertheimer's with us from Democracy 21 out of Washington. Jean Cummings, she's a reporter for Bloomberg News, all over this issue. Laura in Austin, Texas. Laura, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, I wanted to make a comment that I think the American public needs to vote. If we have voting turnouts of 90, 95%, then money wouldn't be so important. I think that the postman did the right thing. I think money politics is corrupting. But if all of us voted, then it wouldn't be so important. It wouldn't be so determinant of a victory.
Yeah, Laura, we've got it. Fred, how do you respond to Laura's idea? Easy. Just go vote, and, you know, then the weight of the people wins.
Well, I agree with her that we should have much more people voting. But the way our system works now, all of this money manipulates the process, and it becomes very hard for citizens and voters to work their way through all of the negative attack ads, all of the mass phone calls they get at night, interrupting their dinners, all of the mail. I think the American people are the solution to this, but I think citizens must rise up and demand solutions from their elected officials. There are solutions to our problems. We have risen up before and demanded these solutions and got them, and we're going to have to do it again, and we will do it again. But I'm all for a whole lot more people voting, and we need to make it much easier for people to vote.
Ben in New Orleans. Ben, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I just had a quick question for your panelists.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering, what is the likelihood? I mean, I know we can all agree that we hate Citizens United, but until it's
not everybody concerned. Does, Ben. We're going to hear another view in just a moment here. But what's your point?
Okay. Well, I'd love to hear that. But what is the likelihood of a candidate like Hillary Clinton, who has the name recognition, winning without taking $2.5 billion worth of super PAC funds?
Well, if you just look at President Barack Obama's reelection, you could see that it's possible. And that's going to the question about citizens re-seizing the democracy by way of voting, that's a very important, smart point to make. However, the way the money, this imbalance in the money can really affect the system in more hidden ways is a presidential candidate will have enough resources to fight back. They will. That campaign's too big for the billionaires to just overrun it. But then you go and you look at Senate races and you look at House races, and that's where a significant imbalance can make a huge difference in terms of who gets into Congress. There was a candidate in Florida who had a super PAC, friendly super PAC, had two donors. That's it. So, I had one of my reporters, I said, go find out what they want. Because if this guy gets elected, those two people are going to own him. And that's the kind of stuff that I think I look for, using the power of the media to really be a watchdog on, because some of those low-level races is where it makes a big, big difference.
But even in presidential, we don't always know. Citizens United, the court said, let's have transparency. We're not getting that transparency, Fred.
Tom, we're not getting the transparency. The court said we were going to get it, and they just were wrong. They didn't understand that the FEC had gutted the rules that would require the disclosure of contributors to outside spending groups. Gene makes a very important point. The Senate and House races can really be affected by super PAC money. But I would also say no presidential candidate is going to take the chance of being overwhelmed by an opponent's super PAC. Even President Obama had an important super PAC in 2012. So, we can solve the disclosure issue tomorrow. Congress came within one vote of enacting legislation that would have ended the problems in 2010. We just have a Congress that is blocking any action on any serious campaign finance reform. And as in terms of fixing this system, Congress has to be the battleground.
I want to go to David Keating. He joins us right now, president of the Center for Competitive Politics out of Washington. They favor, they don't favor restrictions on campaign spending. They've been kind of a champion for letting the money flow into the system, I guess, as a representation of free speech. David Keating, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom. Good to be here.
Do we have, is the gyrocopter pilot right? Do we have a meltdown and a big problem because of the scale of money that is flooding into our politics, David?
No, he's not right. Look, the greatest thing, I think, in our Constitution is the First Amendment. It says Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech. And it's been a great thing. It also protects freedom of religion and freedom of the press. And all the things that Fred's talking about and a lot of groups are talking about is they want to basically gut our First Amendment rights. They want to put Congress, they want to put state legislatures in charge of what can be said about incumbents, what kind of criticism can be made about incumbents, basically 365 days a year. And I think that's the wrong direction.
But anybody can say anything anytime they want. They can walk out with a megaphone and say,
right,
speak their mind.
Okay. Well, imagine if Congress passed a law saying a newspaper can't be published if it accepts advertising for more than $1,000. I mean, what's happening is when you put limits on what can be spent, when you force disclosure of just simply talking about the government, there are going to be people who don't want to criticize the government. And if you put limits on contributions to independent groups, you're going to get less criticism of the government.
But the founders were also pragmatic. I mean, what about the other side of that coin, David, that the little guy who doesn't have $1 billion gets rolled over by the gigantic voice of the billionaire?
No, that's ridiculous.
Oh, it's ridiculous when the little guy has a problem, but not when the rich guy has a problem?
No, it is. What's ridiculous is that the rich, a lot of the great movements in this country were funded by philanthropists. And a good example of this is the Vietnam War movement. That really took a major turn in this country when Gene McCarthy decided to run against an incumbent president, Lyndon Baines Johnson. And he did it late in the fall of 1967, something that would be unheard of today with contribution limits. And Gene McCarthy took money, $10 million.
But come on, there was a huge social movement before Gene McCarthy ever got in the race.
Yes, but he was able to give voice to that campaign because he took $10 million in political contributions in today's money, and he put it all into New Hampshire. And guess what? He forced LBJ out of the race.
You know,
he did well enough in New Hampshire.
Yeah. I mean, look, both sides can play. Hillary Clinton's talking about $2.5 billion here, but here's Miles Rappaport at Common Cause saying we are anointing an aristocracy that's getting stronger and stronger grip on our democracy. What about that risk, Dave?
Well, I think it's, look, there may be risks on all sides, but I think the bigger risk is when you put people in government in charge of what can be said about the government and how much criticism can be made of the government. Where do you draw the line?
Fred Wertheimer, where do you draw the line?
No,
if there's a line to be drawn there, let me get an answer.
Wait a second. Hold on.
A lot
of the legislation is not talking about just supporting or opposing candidates. The legislation would cover any criticism of government during the entire election year.
I have to say, I haven't seen that legislation, but...
Well, that's what's in a lot of the legislation that groups like Fred Wertheimer's group is supporting.
Fred, are you looking to muzzle every critic of the incumbent government?
Here's where you draw the line. You draw the line when money being given to candidates, either directly or laundered into candidates through super PACs, can corrupt our nation. The Founding Fathers...
Oh, come on. What does that mean? That's ridiculous. What kind of standard is that?
David, could I continue?
Wait, you've been
let's just look at one example.
What kind of standard is that? Can corrupt. I mean,
let's,
the fact is half the states in the country have no limits on what can be given to the political parties in those states. There's no evidence that those states have any greater level of corruption.
David, you had your chance
states.
To talk.
None. Yeah.
You had your chance
Fred,
to talk.
Fred, how about it, Fred?
Well, let's just look at a recent indictment of Senator Menendez. Now, that indictment, and it's not a conviction, was based on the charge that a donor seeking, and according to the indictment, buying influence with Senator Menendez did so by giving $600,000 to a super PAC, which was then told to spend the money to support Senator Menendez in his campaign. I consider that corrupting. But more importantly, the Supreme Court that decided Citizens United, made clear that candidate contribution limits are can corrupt and therefore are constitutional. That Supreme Court made clear that citizens are entitled to know where contributions are coming from that are being spent to influence their votes, are entitled to know that. They did that by an 8-1 vote. So I don't know what dream David is living here, but he's talking about a world that doesn't even exist with his Supreme Court.
Gene Cummings, come in here. Here's a coming to us on Facebook from Aaron. He says, every election cycle, it's the same thing. Big issue, but once they get elected, crickets. The Fox will never offer opinions on how to make a hen house more secure. To think otherwise is absurd. Are there ways that this could be tightened up so it doesn't give such a concern about big money potential corruption in our government, Gene?
Well, I don't like to make predictions, but I think that he makes a very good point. The only time that we see major campaign finance reform pass is after a very big scandal or after some messiness. You know, McCain-Feingold was passed after John McCain endured in 2000 just spurious attacks in South Carolina coming from nowhere. And that motivated him to get involved and to help get something passed. And that's why we saw bipartisan legislation then. And, of course, we know much of the original campaign finance structure was developed after Watergate. It may be we need some kind of motivator of that sort. We saw in Virginia after what happened to the governor there when he was convicted on ethics violations, that's when they pass a bill. That often – you need both pieces, which is regrettable, but that is often the case. The one thing I will say, though, for Mr. Hughes, although I don't think it's a very good idea to fly one of those contraptions to begin with – but certainly not to crash land outside of Capitol Hill. But what he did do is we in Washington have kind of been having this debate for the last couple of years and obsessing of it, you know, about it inside the Beltway. He did kind of open the window and create a national conversation. We saw in New Hampshire there was a little protest rally up there about money and politics over the weekend. If they can broaden out this conversation – that could help.
Dave Keating, Chris Christie is saying that I think what is corrupting in this potentially is we don't know where the money is coming from. What about transparency, at least? Are these donors so vulnerable that they can't even attach their name to the millions that they're putting in, David?
Well, all campaign ads are disclosed. All campaign ads have disclaimers on the
ad. Sure, but there's all this dark money around the edges here, and the edges are pretty big.
Look, I'm not sure where dark money starts or where dark money ends, but any money
not
given
either anymore.
Any money given for a campaign ad is disclosed already. In terms of groups that run campaign ads that do not disclose their donors, they account for 5% of the total spending in the last two election cycles. It hasn't changed a bit. What Chris Christie was recommending as a solution was to take campaign contribution limits off, and that way most of the money that is seeking to back a candidate would go to the candidate directly and go to the political parties directly, and the candidates and the parties would be responsible and accountable for accepting those contributions
and make it transparent.
I have no problem with that solution. That's fine with me.
Fred, what's your solution? Take the lid off and make it transparent,
We had that system, and it led to the biggest political scandals of the last century, the Watergate scandals. We had a system of unlimited contributions. We had disclosure, because disclosure had been enacted in 1972, and it resulted in huge contributions directly buying government results. The dairy industry did it with price supports. AT&T did it by killing a antitrust case at the Justice Department, and President Nixon personally intervened in those cases. I would say that's no solution at all. That allows a direct nexus between the donor and the official that you're trying to buy influence with. The Supreme Court would say that's no solution because they have consistently upheld contribution limits.
Hillary Clinton says constitutional amendment. I'm reading here in Slate, Richard Hansen says that's a posturing, a pipe dream. Fred?
Well, I think look, the Citizens United has to be overturned. You can do it by a constitutional amendment, or you can do it by setting the ground rules and laying the base for reversing that decision. And either of those results would change it. A constitutional amendment is very hard. If and when we get a change in the court, you will see a major effort made to reverse Citizens United.
Fred Wertheimer with Democracy 21, David Keating with the Center for Competitive Politics, Gene Cummings, reporter at Bloomberg News. Our thanks to each of you for being with us this hour. Listeners, thanks for all your comments. Watch that campaign as it unfolds. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.